What's up, AfterBuzzes? We're back with another installment of the Magician's After Show. We're talking Season 3, Episode 7. We're talking Poked AIDS. That's right. We're talking eggs. We're talking Benedict. Do you see what I did there? We have a special guest, so stick around.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
You know, we'll get it in one week. Yeah. We'll get there. And see, we got a light party. This is why I say it every week. This is why you guys need to be watching the YouTube stream. But remember, if you're on iTunes, comment, subscribe, that. Guys, that's right. It's the Magician's After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. We're talking Season 3. We're talking Episode 7. We're talking poached eggs. But more importantly than that, we've got a very special guest, friend of the show.
Thank you.
One of our absolute favorite people on the planet coming back. Yes. He directed this episode this week. You can find him online at The Joshua Butler because he's Joshua Butler.
That's right.
What's happening, Josh?
What's happening, Ty?
Man, so happy to have you here.
Good to be here, Adrian, Joel. This jacket is amazing. Thank you. I'm just noticing the textures.
Oh, yeah. Those checkers. Wonderful. You can't replicate those checkers.
No,
get it.
Yeah, so hopefully the light's picking them up.
Basically. Oh, man. Guys, one more week. Our lead host, Carrie Lane, is not with us, but she will be back same time, same channel next week. For now, in her stead, my name is Ty Matthews. Y'all can find me on all forms of social media at Ty Matthews PMA. Joining me, as always, the rest of the squad, my favorite crew.
It's me. It's my turn. Yeah. Hi, I'm Joel Monique. I haven't been here a while. I forgot how to host. You can find me all over the internet at Joel Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
Boy, oh boy.
Hey, guys. I'm Adrian Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrian Snow.
That's right. That's right. I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah.
A lot happening. Yeah. A lot happening this week. But Josh, tell us about what's been going on in your neck of the woods lately.
Oh, yeah. I did direct 2 episodes of this show this season.
There you go.
And it's a great, great season. Mm-hmm. I'm biased, of course.
Of course. Yes, naturally. Naturally.
But I think this show's on fire.
Absolutely. Of course. And, now, this is how many episodes for you all together for The Magicians?
I've done 5.
Okay.
You've now seen 4 of them if mm-hmm. you're watching the show regularly.
Right.
My 5th one will be the second to last one this season.
Ooh!
So, all right.
That's when they always drop the bombs.
You know?
A lot going on in that episode. Yeah. Nice. I'm sworn to secrecy, but a lot of great stuff going on.
Of course, yeah. Of course. So how have things changed or evolved in Season 3 compared to Seasons 1 and 2?
Well, everybody's getting in a groove, I think. It's like this show has such a specific tone that, you know, it's like hard to explain to people because it's kind of a comedy, but mm-hmm. it's also like not like crazy over the top, and it's kind of scary, and it's kind of, you know, fantasy sci-fi, but meta at the same
also
time.
Nerdy. I've been referring people to BoJack Horseman. I'm
BoJack
like,
Horseman,
you know,
yeah.
If you know the tones and themes of BoJack Horseman, you can transition into the Magicians pretty easily.
Which is also all another show that's hard to explain to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So well, sure. Like a horse, but LA, that's weird.
You gotta dive in a horse, BoJack Horseman.
It's all right,
poached horses.
It's all right.
You do.
But no, yeah, and like you said, there is sort of a scary element with the introduction of the fairies and the fairy queen and everything. Yeah. It has taken on a much more, a lot of these subplots have become almost more like horror adjacent.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, and it's just to balance that and to sort of keep that grounded and have everybody be out there taking chances, you know, from a performance standpoint, from a writing standpoint, from a directing standpoint, it's all like trying to push yourself, but like find that edge, but mm-hmm. not go over it. So this show's very, it's like you could do one thing that's just a little too far and people will check out. So you just have to find that fine line, I think.
Right. And we've definitely seen boundaries being pushed. I mean, we start the episode with Margot talking about Fomar and having to kind of read him a bedtime story. One of the more graphic scenes that we saw this season was of his brother getting decapitated at the wedding ceremony.
Indeed. Which I didn't have anything to do with, directorially, but I'm happy to inherit the episode after that one.
Of course. Yeah. So with that, we find that Margot and Tick and Elliot, they're waiting for this kind of shift change to happen. So that they can spring their plan into action. They're finally planning to take the fairy queen down.
And they got chicken pox.
Of course, chicken pox.
The feathers were so great.
You knew the second that someone said that, that Tick was going to misinterpret it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of our favorite kind of running gags this season has been Tick kind of misinterpreting things and taking things literally.
Yeah, Riz is so good with that.
So
yeah,
good.
So, such a talented guy.
I'm mansplaining because I'm a man.
God. probably my favorite line of the whole season so far.
Truly.
But now, talking about the Fairy Queen, I wanted to talk about working with Candace Kane because her portrayal of this queen has been so kind of spot on and so chilling this season. What was it like kind of directing her and working with her?
Well, she also happens to be one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. I mean, she's amazing.
That's always the case with the worst villain.
So it's like, you know, she comes in and you're like, your hugs, and then like 2 hours later she's in the Fairy Queen makeup and you're like, oh wow.
Yeah,
you know,
so
black
scary.
Contact lenses and you're like, ah.
of course.
But no, she gets in the zone and I just love working with her. She's just so intense, like when she's in the queen mode, and then like after we finish shooting, it's just back to, you know.
Yeah, I saw her in an episode of Grey's Anatomy like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, Oh right, she's friendly.
She's like a whole
Yeah, I know. You kind of forget that.
Yeah.
You kind of forget it. If you have a full day of shooting with her, you're like, oh right, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of new cast members, we also got introduced to Felicia Day as Poppy Klein pretty recently.
Yes.
I love this whole dynamic with her and Quentin.
The ageless Felicia Day.
Right, exactly. We talked about that last week.
Doesn't
age a day.
Speaking of Buffy. Yeah, totally.
That's right. Exactly.
Totally. Wait, was she on Buffy?
Wasn't she one of the, I'm pretty sure she was one of the girls in the last season.
Really?
And Buffy was shooting off.
IMDb check.
I feel like yes.
Because then she truly is ageless, because I'm just thinking Eureka.
Well, and the amazing thing for me is that, like, you know, she's got such a YouTube, you know, following.
Yeah.
She sort of is YouTube. Mm-hmm. Kind of. I mean, she kind of...
She got in early.
She
equated
it. Launch it.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And
sure.
And when you work with her, she's just a wonderful, wonderful actor as well. And again, very nice person. And then you're like, and she walks outside and, you know, you've got this... She's got this entire fan base from the YouTube years that are just...
Oh, yeah, she was totally V, 2003.
Well, there you go,
Joe.
Wow.
I honestly rewatch Buffy once a year, so it's a love. What can you do?
That's awesome. I didn't even realize.
That and Friends. It's just hardcore binges for me.
There you go.
But yeah. I keep wanting to jump ahead to the Psych Ward.
Oh, please.
Because I can't remember. Have you directed a Psych Ward episode yet? I was trying to look up your episodes before, but I can't remember if that was like a thing you've been in.
Psych Ward. Was that... That was introduced this season, right? Or is that...
No, that was in the Psych Ward. I mean, we've seen a few at this point.
This
specific Psych Ward seems to be unique and different, but I was curious if you had directed one of the Psych Ward episodes before.
Oh, no, actually, no, you're right, because Jamie Conway did the first... Right, obviously, Quentin, the classic Shake It Off psych ward.
Of course.
Yeah, well, this was a new psych ward we found for this episode, so I remember location scouting this as a new location.
What are you guys looking for in a new psych ward?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, it's hard to find, like, something that resembles a psych ward that actually is not... a psych ward. There's one location in Vancouver that everyone uses as a psych ward. In fact, I did use... There was an episode I did last year. It was episode 210 where Julia was locked in the dungeon, and that was an actual psych ward that we shot in.
Oh, no!
So, but that was, you know, when she was, you know, she was locked up because she lost her shade. That episode... But then the joke is this is an abandoned school that's playing a psych ward in this episode.
Same difference.
So, you look like a principal's office.
Just matching up.
Yeah, there you go.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking back at it now, I'm like, yeah, that feels like my horrible, horrible... Mm-hmm. My high school wasn't that bad, but it was just kind of like bland and not enough windows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's...
That's like a whole thing in the 70s. They thought children would learn better if they didn't have windows.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so my middle school has an atrium in the middle, but it was like all brick Also, none of the classrooms had windows, so we were just in the dark. It was not a great learning environment.
All us 90 kids still paying for our parents' stays.
Exactly. Now, we got a lot of people talking in the chat. We got Trent King, Renji, Nehemiah Burton. They're talking about drunk Dean Fogg, who's like, I love this version of the Dean. Just the Dean that's just kind of over it all.
35% more tolerant with magic.
That's right. That's right.
That's got to be a blow to the system.
Yeah. Boy.
It explains why he's always so like cheerful, though.
Yeah.
He was dealing with all the oppression. Like, he was like, oh, no, the world is great for me.
Everything's great. Nothing's I mean, honestly, as a black person in America, if I had magic, I'd be like, 50% more tolerant.
That's right. He gave me away 36. I was like, okay, they're conservative numbers there.
But, yeah, I totally get it.
But yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's the kind of Dean where after something catastrophic happens, he just kind of will screw it, you know?
Well, I love how he called Julia out for, like, what do you call it? He said, like, you're...
entitled millennial bullshit.
Exactly. Yes. Entitled millennial bullshit. I was like, oh, yeah, that's... You know, actually, he doesn't know the whole story about Julia. You kind of forget that he doesn't really know everything that's happened to her. Mm. But at the same time, that's, like, the exact response that this version of Dean Fogg would have, because he's just like, I don't have time for this. You're making excuses for not getting shit done.
Right.
I like that he's upset that they're not doing things when he's literally doing nothing.
Yeah, he's just in there drinking.
You know?
He's just barking at people like, you stole magic and you gave away your magic and you don't know how to use that magic. It's going to kill you. Dean, calm down. Like, pick a side. Jesus.
Yeah. But I love it.
Absolutely.
We have more of that.
Now, there's so much happening in this episode between Margo and Elliot kind of trying to enact this plan to overthrow the Fairy Queen. Mm-hmm. We've got Quentin and Poppy trying to sort of break Katie out with mm-hmm. Penny's help of the psych ward. Mm-hmm. But we've also got this subplot of Alice having to kind of... her body sort of rejecting this magic mm-hmm. that Julia tried to transfer into her.
Because it's not for her.
Using the Voltaic transfer, because it's not for her, exactly. So what do you guys think about this whole kind of, this dynamic between Alice and Julia and everything that's happening?
Oh, man.
I think it's just nice to see them play together for once. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really have that many episodes where it's Alice and Julia on an adventure.
Right.
For a long time, it was like right. Julia and Katie, and then they were the only two that interacted with each other. So it's nice to see just like the who they are now, because I feel like if they had met in season one, it would have been the reverse. Mm. Julia would have been the more aggressive one, and Alice would have been the more like, we have to do this way, and we have to like be reasonable.
Totally.
So
totally.
It's like they've kind of reversed characters, which is fun to see.
They're definitely our two most damaged characters at this point in the storyline, and it's interesting to see not just the parallels and how they interact with one another, but how they deal with the trauma that they've suffered. Especially where Julia's like, I just don't want to be responsible for this pain anymore. Like, maybe if I can give it to Alice, who is thriving off of pain, she's like, yes, give it all to me. I will hurt, and through that hurt, I will be able to create great things or learn a lot of things. So it's interesting to see them try to manage that. I really like their fight in the park. Just the vampire to everything. Can you talk at all about, first of all, I guess, Alice's rage and that hit? Like, I feel like there's a lot of ways to interpret what's happening inside of Alice in that moment, whether it's just like, I'm upset that you are trying to take this back, or is she just generally angry at the entire world and just has no outlet for this now?
Yeah, I think it's almost like this involuntary response mm-hmm. to Julia's sort of trying to parent her, I think, you know, and we just sort of played it as kind of something she did, you know, not even realizing the force of what she has inside her and then instantly regretting it. So, so it was that kind of, you know, moment of, oh, okay, it happened, and then all of a sudden it's over and you're like, oh shit, is she okay?
And what's it been like, especially with the characters of Alice and Julia, watching them from like season one into season three, where they have kind of become very different people at this point?
Well, I think you said it very articulately. I think that it was interesting because, you know, my first episode was Homecoming in season one, and it was Homecoming. What am I calling Homecoming? I am calling it Homecoming. I directed a Vampire Diaries episode called Homecoming as well. I realize how many things I've directed.
It all comes
with Home in the title. I've done two shorts. Anyway, Homecoming. Yeah, because you know, Alice was that very much that, you know, very let's do this by the book. Let's figure this out. Let's and Julia was out there, you know, with the hedge witches and all that. And now it's this very much this role reversal that I think is very interesting, you know. Yeah. Alice sort of went out and to the Niffin dark side.
And can I ask, I don't know if you would know anything about this, but like in terms of costuming, like there have been like some changes in like certain people's style. Like I've noticed, I don't know. I'm always looking at colors because Breaking Bad just like destroyed me. And I'm like, sure. Is there a color theme? Is there a color theme to this?
Well, Penny would probably be the most glaring example now, especially now that he's
in a suit. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got that simple knot tie.
He's got the knotless tie, which is wild to me.
Yeah.
So mesmerizing.
But like with everyone in general, how like Elliot and Margot have become a lot more glamorous in terms of their style. And then also Alice is like a little bit sexier, but still kind of Alice.
She's moving into full Matrix territory.
Yeah,
long black flowy coats and things.
Like, so I don't know if you have any like.
Well, the costume designer on The Magicians, she is a mad genius. So just incredible. Her name is Magalie, and she's just incredibly French in all the best ways possible. She and everything you've just said, she obsesses over and stays up at night thinking about color, thinking about style. And yeah, there's a meaning really to every choice she makes, and she makes a lot of very bold choices, makes a lot of the costumes herself, and it's the thing is, the crazy part about the fillery stuff is that there's literally like 20 to 25 pieces to each costume. So we have to schedule it, because if a character has a costume change in the middle of a shoot day, it's like you really have to plan for it.
Right.
Because Magalie's made it so complicated. And it does show on screen. I mean, we live in a world of high def 4K. So, you know, if you really examine what she's doing, it's pretty amazing. But it also helps, I think, the actors to really feel and get into the characters. And for Olivia, too, I think, you know, for this kind of iteration of Alice and also where Stella is with Julia, I think, you know, Magalie gives them a tool that they can use as actors to, you know, just in terms of how they fit in their clothes and what that means for them. So, yeah, all those decisions are very much taken seriously.
Oh.
Before we move away from the parking lot, Alice, Julia scene, vampires in this world are everything to me, and I would really appreciate it if we could explore them more. Like, his whole conversation of, like, you're not the usual fangirl type. I was like, get out, yes! Show me a fangirl trying to get turned into a vampire, and that wife is, like, nothing that she expected. Like, they are so much livelier, I think. They were used to either, like, Anne Rice melancholy vampires, or Stephanie Meyer's sparkly vampires, or your traditional, like, monster vampire. I love, like, human vampires. Like, damn, these little girls are coming out here. You know what? I'm going to make a quick buck off of all of them. Totally.
I like that the, like, magical creatures of the Magicians are kind of just, like, messed up humans. Like, they're not, you know, usually you see them and you see a vampire and they'd have like this kind of glamour to them, and I feel like this guy would turn you into a vampire and also maybe sell you a little bit of coke on the side.
Like, you totally felt like that. You're in the car, they were making a deal, like a coke deal, totally. Yeah.
Of course.
So let's just slide them. She put the money in the cup. That is like high key. That's amazing. Like, I didn't even catch that.
Bacchus will definitely get you some angel dust if you're looking for it. You
know, of course.
Can we talk about snorting the magic dust?
Like, oh, that's right. What? That's right.
Fairy dust, y'all. It's fairy dust.
Is it?
Yes. They said it's like an excrement from a magical creature, from a rare magical creature. I was like, oh that's totally fairy dust. No one else got that?
Yeah. Her magic was a little sparkly. Interesting.
Yeah. So
I love it.
But thank you, by the way, about the vampire comment, because I was involved in the casting of Vince. And
awesome.
Very much what you said was how we looked at how to cast that role. Yeah. You know, like, and I knew Kat Turton. He's a great Canadian actor. Mm-hmm. He's been in a lot of great independent films. There's one called Gypsy 83 I saw years ago that I remembered him from, and he's been in, I think, iZombie recently, and mm-hmm. he's just one of those people that when he walks in a room, you just sort of buy him as that person. Like, yeah. you don't think that there's anything really magical about what's going on with him in this sort of, well, I mean, in the sense of it being like this over the top mm-hmm. genre trope, you know, it's sort of much more fun to see, I think, a vampire who's just kind of world weary and has, you know, has lived a few hundred years too long and has seen a few too many fangirls come his way. You know, it's like, right. Okay.
That makes more sense if you've lived for hundreds and hundreds of years, that you'll just be kind of jaded versus being like, still,
especially since society kind of lionizes vampire, you know, it's like, you know, just mythically kind of put them on a pedestal. So, you know, if I was a vampire, I'd probably have his kind of cynicism as well. So I thought he did a really nice job with that.
Yeah. Now, we talked about Penny before. Let's get into kind of what's sort of next for Penny. We see the scene between him and Quentin where they're coming up with this super convoluted kind of plan mm-hmm. for him to go to the underworld, because as we saw, Benedict had that key when he got swallowed up by the dragon mm-hmm. in the abyss. So now it's up to Penny to not only go to the underworld to try and retrieve that key, but to do it in book form, to become a book, to write on the back of this bookworm, this Albanian pygmy dragon, mm-hmm. and then ride that dragon down to the underworld, get that key, and then come back.
I guess, and I just had this thought, but how is he going to get the key? Because he can't. I guess he has to go into the key. Mm-hmm. He can't touch things. Mm-hmm. But if he goes into the key, is he just going to be like morose and not want
to
do anything?
He won't be able to move for sure, because we kind of established that before.
So they need Victoria? Veronica.
Somebody's going to have to be down there. Hopefully Victoria. One of the other librarians, maybe. No,
the traveler, Victoria.
Victoria, well, that's what they were gathering with her. I know, there's a lot of things.
I got a little confused in that part.
Mm-hmm. I feel you.
Yeah.
I am rarely, like, critical of the show because it hits so many fan service moments for me mm-hmm. that I just want to dissolve into it. I want to live in the world of the magicians. It's, like, perfect. But I've always had a problem with, like, Penny. Like, I love Penny, and I always felt like he was the least developed of all the characters, and that we didn't see him a lot, and I didn't really know, like, why is he here other than to be, like, moody and angry. And, like, over the past three episodes, like, Penny's become, like, a full person, and it's amazing. Like, Arjun Gupta has been killing this role since day one, and he's, like, so devoted to the fans. If you don't follow Arjun Gupta on Twitter, you're, like, wasting your time. Like, you need to go on there and follow him, because he is really here for fans and for watching it live and talking to you guys, like, while you're watching it, which is really fun, and it makes it, like, a whole experience. But to see Penny this week, like, finally confess, like, Katie, like, I'm just lucky to know you. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you're having an emotion? Like, you've grown up. You're, like, a full adult now.
But when it comes to Katie, Penny's always had emotion. Because when they had to do that vulnerability test of the season one, and they had to be naked, and he's like, I love you, and, like, I've never said that before, and all that kind of stuff. And she was like, fuck off, Katie. But he's always
like,
dang it, Katie.
So, like, maybe. But I feel like he's never really been in control of his emotions.
And no, he's never been as adult as he probably was in that moment.
It's always poles. It's always like one extreme to the other. Like, either I'm fully in or I'm completely out. And for him to make a choice about how he wants to proceed with his existence, it's hard for me to say life. You're definitely dead, bro. I know you're not like a ghost technically, but you're for sure dead. Like, it's exciting, and it makes me, like, really excited to see his next, like, arc, and it made me want to root more for Penny and Katie. Like, I rooted for Penny and Katie since, like, season one, when I'm like, oh, yes, ship it, adorable. And then they were just so problematic. I'm like, maybe it's healthier if you two are apart. Like, this just doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. And now I'm back on the ship. I'm like, this is perfect. I really love where Penny's going. I cannot wait to see him go into the world. It's going to be so weird and crazy and scary because, like, totally out of our head. We had no idea what's happening down there. But we're going to see a pygmy albino dragon, which is going to be so exciting. Mm. I love dragons. And I really like the way they showed the dragon the first time.
Oh, definitely. All the dragons that we've seen thus far on the show have been awesome.
So impressive.
Now, one little thing that I loved about this episode was the return of Todd and Renan Frey from New York, and just them kind of going on and on about the things that they saw.
Was it the Square of Time?
The Square,
The Square of Time. Yeah, it's a great scene.
Now I wanted to talk about kind of the sort of crossing over of those worlds, taking people that are generally staying in filler and kind of transplanting them into to sort of this realm, because it does seem like the different realms and stuff have such their own kind of look and such their own aesthetic that, like, how do you kind of approach kind of crossing things over like that?
Well, that's actually a great question, because we talked about that, and it starts with costume. You know, it starts with how fillery versus Earth do you want to make the people who are crossing back and forth, you know, and it was, again, a big question. And that scene just seemed to be so funny, to be honest with you. I mean, Elle Lipson, who wrote the episode, the scene just made me laugh right off the top. So the goal, I think, was to see characters that, like, you only see in fillery. I just thought, you know, it's fun to see Fenn in, you know, tourist clothes. And the Todd's, yeah, if you go on Twitter right now, it's a picture of me behind the scenes. I wore that sort of Statue of Liberty hat while I was directing. It was very funny. I just think that's it's a great comic conceit. And so, yeah. You know, it's just, again, that balance of, like, is it too weird to see characters? I think Fenn is the big question, because you really have only seen her in Villery.
Right.
You know, and to see her in Earth clothes, but she's not really committed fully to being in Earth. Type of, she doesn't fit into that environment very easily.
It's like, so I'm gonna quote something really random.
Awesome.
It's like Beastmaster through the portal of time.
Sure.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Beastmaster.
Like,
yay.
When he first goes to New York, and it's kind of like fish out of water.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Or Ella Enchanted.
Ella Enchanted.
Totally, yes. Comes up from a sewer hole with just all her big fluffy dress. Totally.
I feel you. The Beastmaster reference is good. I like it.
I love it.
You pulled out the Beastmaster. I haven't heard. Yeah, it's been a while since I've talked about that. It's great.
It's great. The most unique taste. I love it.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, okay, it's nice to see, because I only see that because you see the first Beastmaster, which is all based in his world, and so it's kind of like you've seen Fenn only in her world. I would love an episode where we get to see her, and I think we talked about this oh my god, why am I blanking on the actress's name?
Brittany
was here, about how it would be nice to see, like, an episode where we follow them into, like, New York.
Sure.
Like, what's it like for them to be in that world?
I feel like it would be very much like Enchanted, where you just see her just kind of wondering at everything that's happening. Even like Frey talking about the man that urinated next to her.
Like, Frey was like a sullen teenager who just got back from Disneyland. She's like, I don't want to admit it. It was fun.
Right.
It was awful. Like, a kid puked in that room in my hotel room. No, it didn't, girl. I saw you on the roller coaster. You were having a good time. Calm down.
I would agree. Disney World wasn't fun when I went as a teen.
Boo, lies. Disney is everything.
I particularly love how Fenn is so happy about Family Style.
Right. Oh my god, the Family Style.
That was my personal favorite in that scene.
Also, try to picture Todd as your tour guide. That's gotta be a mess.
He's a mess. Yes.
When he slips up and calls Elliot dad is another one of my favorite moments.
Oh, that was one of many improvs that actually happened in this episode. Nice. Yes. There was it was just a great moment. We just said, okay, we're keeping that.
Yeah.
Well, and we were talking about it a little before, is that, like, as dark as this show gets, there are those moments of levity where it's it just kind of it brings you back even just for a second, you know? And especially Todd, especially the stuff that we've seen of Todd this season when we found out that he was keeping the Margolem in his closet.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Just for safekeeping, you know.
Right, exactly.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Nothing
yeah.
else.
I was really explicit about staying out of that cabinet. Oh my god, Todd, why?
Oh man.
Why would you not just throw a padlock on that and walk away?
And that's such a perfect segue. Let's talk about Frey finding these fairy eggs and sort of turning on Elliot and on, you know, Fenn.
Yep.
And just kind of selling them out because she thinks that she's a fairy.
Yeah, well, not even that she thinks that she's a fairy, but that's her true family, that she
sees the fairy queen as a mother figure.
And even when before she sells them out, after Todd messes up and, like, she ends up seeing them, because he does, like, the one thing that, of course, if you say don't go here, people are gonna be like, well, obviously.
Well, what's there? Yeah.
Of just having Fenn kind of trying to be like, she's not your family. Even Todd being like, he's like, your role name's Frail Human. Like, do you think she said that because she loves you?
Right.
So to get all of that and for her to still be so naive is really sad. But then all I gotta say is I called it.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you
She's
did.
Not their dog.
Adrian's winning the prediction game, probably 3 seasons strong.
Because when they first announced that they had a daughter, and then you have that whole scene between Margot and Elliot where they're like, no, that's such a trope to fall into. And I was like, yeah, this is a trope, and I kind of hope they don't fall into it, but it would be funny too if they did. So.
Sure.
So, but it was nice to just finally have that confirmed.
Of course.
Well, as far as we know.
Right. But then once that happens, kind of let's talk about what that does to defend Psyche. It's sort of like it. I feel like it breaks the one thing that was grounding her. You know,
the show's done a really great job of exploring trauma, kind of like we talked about before. And sure. In this episode, of course, we get Julia finally confronting, like, look, this is going to be something I have to deal with for a long time, and it's just a responsibility that I either take on or I let consume me. Mm-hmm. To see Frey kind of
her friend.
No, the daughter, right?
Frey, yeah.
Frey,
it gets confusing sometimes.
I understand. Fenn and Frey is close.
Yes.
To see Frey not only recognize that she's, like, not part of them, like, triggered something in me in this, like, if you want to take it to levels of, like, what it's like to discover that you're black, like, as a kid, and be like, oh, so I'm, like, very different. Mm. Like, and the world's going to treat me differently. And to see, like, you know, the queen just turn around and be like, yeah, no, you don't even get to talk. Like, I'm taking everything away. Like, mm-hmm. Your voice, everything. It's interesting that she gets a choice on how she wants to react after that, though.
That we know of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At least the queen tells us that. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder where she goes or what she does. I feel like she's going to be something that we're going to have to watch out for. She could definitely be a force to be reckoned with if she is not dead already.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm more curious to see what's going to happen with Fenn, because she's already kind of gone through that PTSD of having mm-hmm. lost a child, or assuming that she, you know, lost a child, not through death, but through just, like, someone taking the child. And now to have it confirmed that, yeah, there were things that she may have suspected right after the birth, but she just kind of ignored. That's probably even more heartbreaking. But she seems to be, I guess, dealing with it in a somewhat
She's not converting
way.
To log baby.
She's not having a log baby. But at the same time, I, seeing her sharpen that knife, I'm like, ooh, she's angry.
Oh, boy. Like, absolutely.
Like, I was like, that's probably even worse.
I love that they turned the tables on us and Fenn was the torturer.
Oh, right.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. She is like a knife wielder? Is it?
The son of a...
A daughter of a...
Or the daughter. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Brittany, exactly. By the way, just as dedicated as she is to the entire process, she went to knife sharpening school for many weeks.
That's amazing.
Before that,
it
See,
looked like she knew what she was doing.
She did, and then she was our consultant on set. After that.
It
was
oh,
like,
nice.
Wow, yeah. You're like, you really didn't have to do that. We probably could have faked it, but she's better to learn. Yeah, no, mm-hmm. she's
then
great.
You have it.
She's all in.
Yeah, exactly. So we get a lot of these super deep dynamics between Fenn and Elliot and with Frey and everything. But I think one of my favorite parts of the episode was this conversation between Elliot and Margot in the coach, where we get that sort of conversation where Margot's like, look, you can't really understand this. This was all just handed to you. Mm. And I wanted to ask you about kind of the difficulty of approaching these super interpersonal dynamics when so much bigger is happening with magic and all these different worlds. But when it all comes down to it, it's about these super deep moments between, like, best friends in the case of Margot and Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about approaching scenes like that and how kind of, I imagine it's a delicate needle to thread.
It's very delicate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially with Summer and Hale, because, you know, they're so, like, always commenting on the world. There's something very meta, I think, about their relationship and the way they always sort of, their style of humor and their bond that's based on that kind of sarcasm that, you know, where they're always sort of telling it like it is. Mm-hmm. And so to kind of transition them into something that's sentimental without being cheesy is always the needle that you're threading with them. And mm-hmm. so great thing about Summer and Hale is that they're both so, like, incredibly they have such craft, both of them, and they're so willing to play, but those scenes require a lot of you know, experimentation on film, and mm-hmm. we do a lot of takes just to sort of try coming at the scene in different ways, because you can come at it, you know, from a humor perspective, so something, you know, that's where they're using humor is to deflect the real emotion, or they're coming into it very emotional, and then, you know, they're trying to use humor to sort of get themselves out of it. So it's just, again, that sort of balance, I think. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they always find a way to nail it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
They even got the slip from, like, power, like, to being in power to just having zero power so fast, and then just, they're like, we won, like, we stole your back. Right. Like, it's all over for you, and yeah. that slow like realization of like, this bitch got us again, like, mm-hmm. how yeah. oh, she is so good. Although she did say something that I've been predicting for a long time, which okay. is, I'm trying to help you,
yeah,
and you're not listening.
Right.
She fairies do this stuff, they get it, they are Jigsaw, they're like, well, I'm gonna give you what you want, but you're gonna have to play my game first,
right?
And then they're just not listening, and I feel like, and
if you just chop off your foot,
do it.
And okay. shoot this guy. Exactly. You'll be fine.
It's not yeah. going to be a fun game, but you will get what you want.
Yeah.
The fact that they drug them off into different directions really scares me. Those two, they can, we've seen them survive on their own, but like, they're so much stronger together, and mm-hmm. I'm just very terrified now. Like, Margo's already dedicated an eye to this bullshit. Like, yeah. I'm worried.
Right, exactly. And that's, yeah, that was kind of, yeah, jumping ahead to that last shot is such kind of like, It's such a great cliffhanger to go out on. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you go from this when it's a full-on revolt happening?
And she's just screaming, I'm your queen, motherfuckers. But like,
that's not a good take. That's how, like, let them eat cake territory.
Nah. But, like, I think it speaks to a kind of how people in power don't always really realize what's going on with their people. And how the Fairy Queen was probably shielding them from a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Like, that... maybe for their betterment and maybe not. And so to kind of have, because honestly, I don't think we really ever see any Falorian people that much that aren't really a part don't. Of the castle already.
Sure.
So to see them throwing fruit and starting, you know, a riot, essentially, I'm like, oh, okay, something's been going on. And then also for them to, for the episode pretty much to open, at least with Margo and Elliot, of the floaters being like,
oh, absolutely
staked.
That was a grisly.
I was like,
what was it like coming onto that set?
It's a, well, you know, that was in the works for several weeks, and you know, it's about figuring out the ways. All right, is do we do this with actual actors who are in harnesses, or do you do them with
dummies?
Mm-hmm. And you know, and then we went with dummies, but then it's like, okay, how do you make them look cool, and you know, where, you know, do you line up the stakes six, three on either side, and you know, which orchestration of the bodies look best, and
the then logistics I mean, of a
and
massacre.
Then the logistics, and then I'm there on, and then when you know, because you set it up the day of, TV goes so fast, you're not yeah. really doing this in advance, so you're standing there, and I was there for about an hour talking like, where do we put the blood, and you know, mm-hmm. like
it's like a day on Game of Thrones, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Well, no, right. A day on Game of Thrones we have to do in 2 hours, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
on
exactly.
this kind of a schedule. So, yeah, it's like, okay, no, we're blood here, you know. So it was very much a very clinical process.
Right.
I got a lot of fake blood on my clothes that day. But it's worth it. It was cool.
Now, elsewhere near the end of the episode, we see this scene between Quentin and Poppy, where Quentin's just sort of having sort of a panic attack, and mm-hmm. she short circuits it as she says
yeah.
by kissing him and saying, hey, why don't we just have some fun?
Poppy is a Jezebel.
Right.
She is leading you into temptation, and you need to steer clear of that.
No, I don't trust her. Don't trust her one bit.
She is pretty untrustworthy, I will say that. But at the same time, I am probably, in every relationship, Quentin and my exes are always Poppy, because I'm like, but what is this? But what about? And they're like, Adrian, just come here and kiss me. I'm like, what? Okay.
You feel better now.
So
thank
everyone
you.
Kind of needs a Poppy in their life, you know, for those freak out moments. So I get what she's doing in that moment, but I also don't trust her, because we find out that she bone Josh, and that's why.
Oh, right, on spring break. Victoria's, and that's like, why Victoria hates mm-hmm. her.
I just feel like, how great a loss is Josh? as a boyfriend, as a friend, I'd be pissed if somebody took Josh from me. Like, we couldn't be friends anymore. Like, that guy knows how to party, and we were having a good time. But I don't know how much, like, he's off growing his tomatoes all the time. Like, how great of a boyfriend is Josh? Really?
Yeah.
I don't see it.
I feel like he'd be good. I feel like he'd be good. Yeah.
We haven't seen that side of him.
No, huh? We haven't seen Josh in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I need him to come back. Josh is my favorite.
We love Josh. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Although it is confusing on set.
Right.
Not that one.
But Trevor's so funny, and he's so dialed into Josh. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Now we also see Marley Matlin return in this in this episode, and I love that. That dynamic between her and Katie. Like, she's done doing all of these favors for Katie.
She's
over
like,
and over.
I've been helping you from jump.
Right.
Yes. I've received nothing in return.
Katie's like,
I'm
one more,
done.
Though. Just one. I promise this one's going to be worth it. It's not.
I watched the episode twice, and so the first time she did the... And then that, I was like, I don't know what that means.
Right.
And then the second time, because I kind of forgotten what that meant, because she goes and tells you afterwards, I was like... Oh, she's doing it. It's a trade. I'll give you this and we'll do. I was like, oh, that's. I understand.
See,
it.
There you go.
I'm so happy for myself.
Well, we actually were on set and we actually think Jade came up with that idea of like, why don't we try? We shot it both ways, you know, where we thought, okay, she's going to say it as she signs it or she's not going to say it. And then we're not going to subtitle it. And I think it was a braver choice to go with, and I'll give Jade the credit for that idea, because I think it was that was the more sophisticated choice.
Yeah. And it makes you kind of lean into it more. It's like when, like on Dexter, whenever they spoke Spanish in Dexter, there was no subtitles.
Right.
So you kind of had to be like, I just missed a whole chunk of the episode.
I gotta read the context.
Like, I gotta go figure out.
Call my friends. Be like, translate, help me.
Yeah. So
right.
I think that's always kind of, and I know a lot of people don't like that, but I always like it when there's like a moment where it's like, this is just not something you get to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you know ASL, or Spanish, and you know,
exactly.
It's like, so yeah, it just
it's kind of not for you.
It's not
you
for
know.
You, exactly. Yeah. Or it's for the people that know, and it kind of makes you say, okay, maybe I should be more awakened to the fact that, you know,
definitely
not everybody speaks English in this world. You know,
right?
Yeah. So you do have to step it up sometimes and figure it out,
right? Yeah. So we find out about this plan that they have to rob the library in sort of their...
Another heist.
In their quest. Another heist, of course.
I love the heist.
We love the magician heists. Mm-hmm. And that goodbye between Penny and Katie. Yeah. I feel like Penny and Katie are just eternally stuck in like this sort of Han and Leia kind of thing.
I was like, oh man, Penny will always be Leia, and Katie will always be Han.
Exactly.
And she won't even give him an I know.
No, exactly. Just nothing.
He's like, I love you, and she's just like,
I was waiting for this to be the time that she said it back. Nope.
You know, she's never gonna say it. What we're gonna get is I know.
Right, no, exactly.
Yeah.
Katie's like, you know how I feel. Like, just deal with that.
Yeah.
The goodbye was so hard, but it also, again, just seeing Penny, like, essentially, like, mount his horse and charge into battle, I was like, this is everything.
Mm. Exactly, yeah. So going back to that parking lot scene that we were talking about, we see that kind of little... I guess you could call it a fight, in as much as it was as it could have been,
or the most epic bitch slap in history.
Yeah. Exactly,
it's just one move, just bam. I was like, damn,
and that's
so
what made her realize, like, okay, you can have it.
Far.
Yep, I've got too far.
Yeah, no, it was nice to see her kind of like have that moment of old school Alice,
right?
Like, yeah, it's not for me, and for her to. I guess normalize the magic for Julia, to be like, it might have come from him, but I felt it. It's your magic now. It has nothing to do with Reynard anymore.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's, she probably really needed to hear
that. Was really beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that was one of the most powerful moments of the show, is her sort of coming to that realization, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really kind of everything. Did we cover everything?
Very, very quickly. Quentin and Poppy trying to break her out of prison was hilarious.
Oh my gosh, yeah, posing as the doctors.
First of all, both of their, like, just innate knowledge of how a mental institution would work. And for them, they're like, yeah, and then this. And then she's like, yeah, it's just practical fire. Like, how do you not know this? And he's like, what, how many times have you done this?
Well, I love Felicia Day's delivery where she's like, I had a crazy time. And she's like, I was like, that is probably one of the, like, most cheerful, like, nonchalant ways to talk about mental illness. To be like, yeah, I went through this thing. It's fine.
You know.
Well, and speaking of that scene, everybody should go back and freeze frame on the moment that Poppy is burning the pamphlets. There's a little treat for you there.
Interesting.
Nice.
You've probably seen it on Twitter maybe already, but if not, go see. Don't check social media. Go freeze frame that. I think it's my favorite moment in the episode, but you can only catch it via freeze frame.
Now one last thing that we didn't really cover, and that I don't know if I know a ton about this character, if I just don't remember or recognize her, but the woman that kind of swooped in and bought break bills.
Oh, yeah.
From under, okay, right.
Yeah. Also a Eureka alumni.
Oh, there you go.
Jamie Eureka, you guys.
And that kind of antagonistic relationship between her and the dean, where he's like, you couldn't have even texted me first?
Yeah, well, because she lied to him. Well, he lied. That was when we discovered that the fairies are also kind of a part of her house magic when they have the key. And you see
that
happened, and she got it. The magic that...
Are those fairies trapped? Are they? I have questions now, because at first, when I first saw the fairies, I was like, oh, they're like following the crew around because they know they're getting the keys. Mm. But now that we see the fairy dust, like, you wonder, are they enslaved?
I think you were gone the episode where we talked about how we think that particular family has some type of power over the fairies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
I have questions now. I have to go back and rewatch, y'all. That's incredible.
But yeah, that's the last time we saw her. And then earlier in the season when they were first talking about selling it and how she really wanted magic.
There you go. So yeah, just wanted to touch on that. But that's it. I think that's everything. Josh, thank you so much.
It's always so much fun talking about it.
Yeah. I don't know if we have time. Do we have time to get into predictions? Let's get into predictions.
Just quick 5-second predictions.
Do we know? No?
Yes. After Buzz TV predictions.
The quick ones.
Oh, yeah.
The quick version.
You have like an audio tag. We have a very
quick version.
7 seconds or less. Now that I know about these fairies in the house, I really feel like the fairy queen and her might have some kind of deal. She bought break bills and she was trying really hard to act nonchalant about it. Like, no, don't even worry. Like, it could have been so much worse. I'm really doing you a favor without ever saying her intentions for the school. Not, I'm trying to save the school. Not, I think, you know, hopefully we'll get you back. And still, like, nothing. There's just nothing happening with her. So now I think she's part of the fairy plan. But I still don't think the fairies are evil. And I have so many questions.
Adrian, what do you think?
I think that we're going to have I think we're going to have something where it's more of, we're going to see that Fillory isn't exactly what we thought it was. And so it was going to kind of be... Margot and Elliot are going to be exposed to what's really been going on in Fillory.
Okay.
Because we just haven't really seen Fillory in a while. We've only seen the castle.
Right.
So I think that's going to happen. I think I'm really excited for the heist and to see how they're going to get into the library. And I think Penny's going to run... Just because in that time that I was taking to think about it, I was like, I think Penny's going to run into trouble when it's time to leave the underworld.
And right, so, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of... That's sort of what I was thinking is I feel like... Something's going to happen down there. And I feel like, for some reason, I get this feeling that Benedict isn't going to make it easy to get this key for whatever reason. Mm. I don't know why I think that, but I feel like they're going to go like, all right, give it up. It's time to go. And it's not going to be that easy.
Or it might have already been confiscated.
Yeah, right.
By the underworld.
By underworld customs. Mm-hmm. Right.
Or maybe everyone in the underworld has touched the key because they're just trying to like handle it, and they end up all being like, you can't get any more death in the underworld, but they're all like incredibly morose.
Right, exactly.
That's so miserable. Oh my god. Everyone's just trying to kill themselves with a cat. They're already dead.
Endless torture.
Right, exactly. Oh man. Well, I'm excited to talk about next week's episode. Josh, are you going to be back?
I directed episode 12, so hopefully I will.
There you go.
Join you again.
Josh will be back later this season.
To see if any of your predictions came true or
exactly,
not.
Exactly.
Which
right
I may
there.
Or may not know.
Exactly. But you guys, thank you so much for joining us. Remember, if you're on YouTube, leave us a thumbs up, leave us a comment. We want to talk to you. Talk to us about the Magicians. We've got the live chat going on right now. You guys are awesome. We love seeing your guys' theories and your guys' hot takes on everything. So yeah, thumbs up, comment if you're on iTunes, download, comment, review, subscribe, rate, 5 stars if you're nasty, all that good stuff. Just find us on social media. With that being said, guys, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrienne Snow.
Hey guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique every week at blackgirlnerds.com and this Monday on Heroes over at Collider.
There you go. Nice. And wait, real quick, Anthony, can you hit us with that sweet, sweet outro music? It just doesn't feel the same without it. There you go. Right there. Now, Joshua Butler, where can they find you?
Find me everywhere except Snapchat at the Joshua Butler. I still don't understand Snapchat. Sorry.
No Snapchat. Well, especially right now. Especially with the
Snapchat. I don't get it.
No Snapchat.
But everywhere else.
The Joshua Butler. Find him online. You guys can find me on all forms of social media at Ty Matthews PMA. This is the only show I'm doing right now. I know I saw an Omnic Girl in the chat, so find me on PlayStation Network. Let's play some Overwatch. Ty Matthews PMA. And if you like pro wrestling, find me on Championship Wrestling of Hollywood. Saturdays. Everyone loves pro wrestling. Get some in your life. But for us, we'll be right back here, same time, same channel, next week, talking Season 3, Episode 8 of The Magicians.
Yes.
But until then, peace!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.